number of staff members who've waited very patiently all day. Please read the item.
Item 606, authorized conveyance of city-owned property located at 1620 Northwest 14th Avenue to Innovative Housing, Inc., and funding in an amount not to exceed $11,434,111 to Innovative Housing, Inc., and its affiliate, Raleigh Housing Limited Partnership, for the construction of a new 93-unit affordable housing development.
Thank you. You want to come on up, Director Krieger?
I will lead off. Kirk Krieger, Housing Bureau Director, joined by Sarah Stevenson, Executive Director of Innovative Housing, and Julie Garver, Project Manager. Just as a way of framing the issue for you, we were last here in November, just before Thanksgiving, and the issue had to do with an appeal to a design commission approval of with conditions that were deemed unacceptable by IHA and ultimately unacceptable to the City Council. Since then, Innovative Housing has been working diligently to perfect the working drawings and to arrange for the final financing of the project. I would underscore that the design architect, Alex Salazar, supported by LRS Architects, has been working for the last several months on this project. I would be remiss if I didn't recognize that PBOT was helpful in this process because it involved a lot of utility coordination and some exceptions to existing policy, and that the Bureau of Development Services and Rebecca Essau's crew has been extremely helpful. I'd also like to recognize that the site was acquired by the Housing Bureau for $1.2 million, a little bit less than its current value of $1.9 million in 2015. And this was a site acquired from Hoyt Street Properties under duress to help fulfill obligations for affordable housing in the River District. Javier Mina was the director of the Housing Bureau at the time that the site was acquired, and he was supported by Carl Dinkelspiel, our housing finance manager, and John Marshall, who is our project manager. The other thing that I think is important to mention is that Innovative Housing, Inc. has effectively increased the density of the property through a density transfer of PNCA's historic National Register property in the neighborhood. So we were able to achieve an additional 16 affordable units over and above what they originally proposed in the 2015 proposal that they proffered to the Housing Bureau. $11.4 million is a lot of money, but this also leverages additional resources. The total project cost is some $35.8 million, which includes financial support from Wells Fargo, Raymond James, Massachusetts Mutual Life Insurance, Innovative Housing itself, which has contributed a portion of its developer's fee to the project, and HUD through Home Forward, because there are some project-based rental assistance vouchers attached to this particular project. And the real good news story here is that we're supporting homeless families in one of the most attractive neighborhoods of Portland, the Pearl, and people who are working in the district. And I'll let Sarah and Julie finish.
So Julie is our Director of Housing Development, and she's going to show you some slides and talk about some of the building amenities first, and then we'll shift over to me, and I'll talk about the services we're going to provide our residents and why, you know, a little bit more about why we think this is going to be such a great place for families to thrive and succeed. Or maybe I will go first. Okay, while we get the slides up, maybe I will go first. So based on our current portfolio and our experience housing families in Portland, we're anticipating that these 93 units will house up probably over 300 people each year, and that at least half of those will be children. We expect our average household income to be right around 30% of area median. That's based on our current family portfolio, even though many of the units in this building will be set aside for households that earn up to 50 and 60%. It is more typical that we house lower-income households. And as Kurt said, 45 of the units will be set aside for families that earn no more than 30%. 40 of those households will be coming directly out of homelessness. So that helps bring down the average income of the households. But we do find that most families we house struggle significantly, not only with income, but also with some other challenges. So we find that in order to help them succeed and stay stable in their housing, we really need to bring wraparound services. So in addition to our partnership with Multnomah County, who will be referring the homeless families, and with JOIN and Human Solutions and many of the other organizations that provide case management services, which is, you know, much more comprehensive alcohol and drug counseling, different things that families might need. We provide resident services on site. We will have a full-time staff person dedicated to this building, not only to serve the homeless families, but all 93 of our households. Our basic resident service program includes orientations and basic needs assessments. Our first goal is housing stability, and part of that is making sure that everyone's basic needs are met. So we do a lot of information and resource referrals. We have a lot of partnerships with other service organizations throughout Portland. We do a lot of direct service and advocacy. We find that many families need assistance accessing benefits that they are entitled to, but because of bureaucratic systems, they can use some help. One of our main goals and the biggest push that we work on is eviction prevention. So any time that a household is at risk of eviction, whether for non-payment of rent or any behavioral issue or lease violation, our resident service coordinators step in right away. We waive late fees if people will sit down and do a budgeting session and start doing some financial education with us. And we also help make connections to different service providers and resources if there are lease violations that we can help address. Are you ready?
Ready to do it without the slides.
Okay, well then I'll say just a couple things. We also do a lot of tenant education, a lot of community building, and we have some special programs that we envision will bring to bear on this building, especially around holistic family services and youth programming, academic support, homework help, teen mentoring program. We have a strong college prep program that we try to, one of our goals around our youth programming is high school graduation. We think that's a huge, significant way to help break the cycle of poverty is to get kids through high school and into that next step. So we will bring all of those services to bear, and then the rest of our services will be tailored to the building. So we will see what people need and what they want, and then we will deliver that.
Well, we may or may not have slides for you, but I'll try to do a word picture. We are really excited about this building and everything it's going to bring to families. When you enter the building on the ground floor, you have a generous lobby, offices, and a coffee shop, or a neighborhood retail space, which the neighborhood and design review really encouraged us to do. So it'll be nice to have that small space interactive with the neighborhood. On the second floor is where our secure community space for the building is going to be housed, and it will have a large community room that has a dividing door so it can be divided into smaller meetings. It has a community kitchen there. It has a indoor-outdoor play area that will take care of kids in the inclement weather, but also has a nice door that raises out to an outdoor courtyard on the second floor that'll have play equipment. And then the laundry room is right there, integral in the program, too, so that parents and kids can all be in the same space and folks can be supervised. Nice bike room. And then moving up to the 12th floor, we have a small roof deck, 750 square foot of roof deck to be on the 12th floor with nice views. And the roof itself will have solar panels and a green roof. So the building is really built to last, concrete and steel, so it's going to be there over generations and provide a lot of nice amenities for residents. Any questions?
Questions, colleagues?
I just have to note that it's really unfortunate that people who come and yell at us for not doing anything for people who live outside were not here to hear that presentation, because it really, I appreciate the work that you're doing, Mary. I appreciate your leadership of the Housing Bureau, and this is what I know. We've got lots of staff who work on this stuff day in, day out, so thank you.
Commissioner Fish.
So, Director Krieger, the good news is that almost half the units are targeted to the people that have the greatest need in our community. And we're accomplishing that by pairing the units with Section 8 vouchers. So I guess we should acknowledge Home Forward. This is part of the allocation that they made to ensure that we could get deeply affordable housing.
It is indeed. These are project-based rental assistance vouchers that were allocated at the outset.
40 of them, yes. Mm-hmm.
So those are families who will be paying one-third of their income for rent and utilities under the payment standards established by Home Forward. And if their income declines, their rent will therefore decline proportionately, and the federal government will pay the difference.
And maybe this is obvious, but we're talking about a lot of units for very low-income people, and many of them families coming off the streets, so coming out of homelessness, which is great. And you've talked about the wraparound services on site. So do these qualify as permanent supportive housing units, or are they functionally the equivalent?
Well, I'm not sure that you're providing the complete suite of services, but you're matching people to their needs. Right. So to the extent that they have mental health treatment service needs, they're getting that support. So we would consider these permanent supportive housing units. The other thing that it's important to underscore is that this is immediately across the street to the north of Ramona.
Yes.
And there is an early childhood education center at Ramona. So within 60 feet, people are going to have some early childhood education services. And while this is 100% affordable, there's market rate housing immediately adjacent in the neighborhood. To the east is Abigail, which includes market rate units. The bridge opened last summer.
Yeah.
So it's a mixed income neighborhood, and we're pleased that this was able to proceed.
You know, most of that new development happened once the city finished the work on the fields, and that actually became the catalyst both for the work that Hoyt Street did, and then a lot, and then Bridge came along, and a lot of the other stuff. I don't remember the last time we had a project that came back to us with almost half the units at 0 to 30. We talk about wanting to get deeply affordable units, but I don't remember, Kurt, the last time we had something with these numbers.
No, we're normally getting between 7% and 15% at that level. This is a much richer sort of mix, and it's been the dedicated sort of concentration of innovative housing to reach those numbers. It's one of the reasons why the financing is taken this long.
We had someone this morning, to Commissioner Fritz's point, who was here, who spoke during the public comment, and she said we should be distributing affordable housing in neighborhoods across the city, and we talked about what it is to be in a high opportunity area. To have family-friendly housing, deeply affordable in the Pearl, is about as good as you can get. And the fact that it's next to the Ramona, where there's a school that may be appropriate for the kids, then walking distance to a park. I'm very excited about this, so congratulations.
Thank you. It's a great opportunity. One thing I should mention, there are 32 three-bedroom units, 32 two-bedroom units, and 32-ish one-bedroom units. So it's skewed towards very large units also. So it really is a family property. We didn't mention that. But it's harder to build bigger, so I wanted to make sure you know they're big units.
Commissioner Fritz?
How do you choose who gets to be there?
Ooh, tough question.
Well, we don't choose. Fair housing would dictate how we accept applications. The 40 homeless families will be referred through the Multnomah County Homeless Family Continuum, so the county will refer those that get to access the project-based vouchers.
I'd be really, not now obviously, like to know more details about how do they make sure that the demographics of the people in this new building represent the demographics of our community as a whole.
The Fair Housing Act has something to say about that, and would limit. But the good news is the Section 8 wait list, for example, is heavily weighted towards older, disabled, people of color, and people in poverty. So that's more a more diverse list. But the Fair Housing Act has something to say about if you will, cherry picking what tenants come into these units.
Right. We don't really get to choose, but we do get to do outreach, and we do get to publicize and let people know about housing opportunity. And so that does fall to us in the lease up process.
And I think what we've done in the past is say having the Urban League help with that outreach.
Exactly. We've got partners that we make sure get the pre-applications as soon as we start pre-leasing. We do work with a lot of partners to get the word out.
And some
Immigrant
of you
Refugee
heard about
Community Association.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
The NOAP fee, Tyrone Pools Company, has been retained by the Housing Bureau so that in the future, vacancies in the entire permanent affordable realm of some 14,000 units today will be vacancies will be placed through that online service. people won't be paying an application fee, and that allows us a great deal of selection so that individuals can have their own project profile and can select from available vacant units within the community at any given point in time. So people with disabilities, people of various races and ethnicities, people with children will all essentially have a project profile, and the city is underwriting the cost of NOAB fee for that purpose.
Can you just remind me of one other thing, and that is what percentage of the units are required to be ADA accessible under the housing laws?
You have the state standard of, what is it?
Yeah, we have, we're required to have 5%, and we'll have 10% built as accessible, and all of them will be adaptable.
Great.
And visitable.
Thank you.
We'll have two elevators in the project.
So if I think I just heard that the state rule is 5%, this is going to be 10% plus all adaptable.
And we do have a partnership with Community Vision also, and we just portfolio-wide, we work with them to let them know whenever we have ADA units available because they are hard to find.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I'll just throw my accolades onto the table as well. I think this is an amazing partnership. And I want to acknowledge that a lot of this work started when Commissioner Saltzman was the housing commissioner. He's not here, but I think it's important for me to certainly acknowledge that as the housing commissioner come lately. This is a fabulous partnership. And I think one of the reasons it is so successful is all these different organizations coming together. You have the project sponsor, Innovative Housing, Inc. Home Forward, as has been discussed, has provided the Section 8 vouchers. IHI is partnering with the Multnomah County Homelessness Services. So we've got the county throwing their wholehearted support and infrastructure and capacity behind this important effort. And of course, we've got Human Solutions and JOIN and others who are working with us to make sure that this is a successful program. You know, my thinking is we could fill this entire program very, very, very quickly, particularly because, as Commissioner Fish noted, there is such a deep level of affordability that's built into this model. And as Commissioner Fritz mentioned, there's a tremendous bias in favor of family units. And I think it's great, and I hope it's really well received by the community. I think people are going to see this as a truly positive, family-friendly addition to the neighborhood. And you know, there are always challenges associated with that, but I think with this partnership and with the strength of the proposal, I think it has that very, very high chance of likelihood and success. So I want to thank you all for that as well. Is there are there any other questions between before we get to public testimony?
Yes,
we'll let you guys take a break for a bit. And do we have a couple people?
Yes, two people, Mary Sipe and Charles Bridge Crane Johnson.
Very good.
Hello?
Hello.
Again.
Thank you.
As you all know, the whole reason that we have this project.
Name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mary Sipe. is because of the, what I want to say, the vision of the city when the Pearl District was being developed. And this land that was deemed worthless was practically given to a developer by the city to create the Portland Pearl District. But one of the things that they put in the requirements was that 30 or 35%, I think it was 35% of the housing that was put in this development would be affordable housing. And the reason that the city purchased and was able to purchase this particular lot, known as Block 26, from Hoyt Street Properties was because, according to the agreement, they had not met that threshold of affordable housing. And so the city was able to purchase this lot at a discount. And fortunately, Innovative Housing has stepped up to the plate and is going to provide us with another income-restricted or low-income affordable housing, whatever you want to call it. I do wonder, Hoyt Street has just three blocks left in this area. They have Block 23, Block 24, and Block 29. And they just announced plans for Block 29 they're going to build because it's directly under the 405 bridge. And these lots are right up against the railroad tracks as well. They're going to turn on Lot 29, they're going to build a storage facility. They are also looking at senior housing at Block 23. Now, I know that's not going to be affordable senior housing. And as you know, I happen to live in one of the income-restricted projects, and I've spoken before about the need for this type of housing for seniors. And I just want to reiterate that and also kind of throw a pitch out to Innovative Housing. I think it's wonderful that we are building this community in this area for low-income families. But we also do have a very neglected segment of the population that are seniors that are living on strictly Social Security, on fixed incomes, with no opportunity, literally no opportunity to increase their incomes. And so I would like to encourage the city to look and see, do they have the opportunity to purchase another piece of property from Hoyt Street before it's all gone? So.
Great question, Mary, and if I could just reflect for a moment, I want to assure you that the commitment to an age-friendly city is more than just a hollow commitment, and there are, in fact, projects we're sketching out right now with a focus on intergenerational housing. And so I just want to second
Great.
What you're saying. I absolutely agree with you that we cannot neglect an aging population, particularly an aging population with declining real incomes in this environment.
Right.
And so well said, and
well, thank you.
I agree with you.
If you need a citizen representative to help with any of that, you know where to find me.
Thanks,
and I would be more than happy to participate in any way that I can to help
Excellent.
That along.
You know, we have an oversight body that we started called the PHAC, the Portland Housing Advisory Commission, and I think you'd be an outstanding member of that, and I hope you'll talk to Kurt about just knowing about future vacancies, because
okay.
that's the body that advises the Bureau on an ongoing basis, and given your interest and expertise, I think you'd be terrific.
Well, thank you. I really would appreciate that opportunity, and I'll talk to Kurt.
Very
thank
good.
You.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. For the record, Charles Bridgecrane Johnson, and, you know, it's great property. I think that the it's easier to have more enthusiasm for this, maybe just because of its size and the family reach, than it was for the Erickson, which I think is the last one that really involved a substantial amount of city money, I think, before you were here. I do think that when we look at, I know there's another agenda item coming up with bond investment, that we're eventually going to need some kind of metric, a tool to tell us about bang for the buck, and maybe ways to incentivize developers to give us projects like these that are, you know, 100% of the units are below 80% MFI. Find out what Catholic Charities was able to do. I don't think they even had the help of the tax crediting investment from Wells Fargo and stuff like that, so that we get more lots with these buildings that are just loaded below 80% MFI. The other thing that was mentioned is the Home Forward of the Housing Bureau's use of no app fee. You know, ideally, you know, these types of specialized investment vehicles can only reach a small portion of the people that need to get housed. So I hope that in whatever's going on with no app fee, you can find a way to incentivize large-scale landlords, even perhaps less popular with some of us, people like APM and stuff like that. If there can be a financial incentive tool, whether it's an adjustment, maybe a break on the relocation fee or something, so that some of the very large portfolio property owners will be on no app fee instead of having that really prohibitive revenue. It's actually a screening tool. Application fees can be a screening tool to screen out what sub-property managers consider less desirable. So I hope we'll see some work in that area as well. Thank you.
Make one little pitch with, I had a few seconds left, to Innovative Housing to please not use the impact hammer pile driver on the building.
We are not.
Yay.
Thank you.
Kirk, can you come back for a sec? Just Director Krieger, can you come back for one sec?
Yes, sir.
I neglected to ask, just to clarify, the affordability covenant here lasts 60 or 90?
This is a 60 years. We are migrating to 99 years, but this was procured in 2015 before that new standard was set, and I've been honoring those prior agreements.
And just to be clear, of the total financing, we're providing about a third, which means we're helping to leverage tax credits and private equity and debt and other sources to make this deal work.
Yeah, it's a 3-to-1 leverage. We're gaining $2 of outside money for every $1 of city money invested in the project. And you know, you took up the short-term rental measure earlier today. When I was initially asked to quantify the number of units lost and came up with the 1,000 units, I had said then that the replacement cost for those was about $385 a unit, and that's what this costs. This is a step in the right direction, certainly.
Thank you.
Very good. Any further questions for the director? Any further comment? Please call the roll.
Fish.
Well, I'm very, very pleased and proud to support this. It meets so many of the city's goals. It serves the poorest of the poor within our community and with a focus on people who've experienced homelessness and want to get back on their feet. It's in a high opportunity area, which means we're investing in a place that low-income, moderate-income, wealthy households would like to live, and so it advances our goal of giving people meaningful choice. It's a fantastic leverage. The partnership both with the city, the county, Home Forward, and IHI is the way we do our best work, so I'm very pleased with that. You know, not that long ago, we would have some people here testifying and objecting to the cost of this project per unit, and the council has pretty consistently, and particularly under Dan's leadership at the Housing Bureau, pointed out that there is a cost of building housing for the long term that's high quality and it serves the needs of people. And I'll just close by saying, when we invest in beautiful libraries, we rarely have people come out and say we're spending public money recklessly and building a beautiful library. When we build beautiful train stations and public amenities, people usually don't come out and say, you're wasting money on that. When we invest in beautiful parks, people usually come and celebrate the fact and not criticize us. I'd like to think that we have the same pride in investing public resources in long-term affordable housing, which is part of the asset base of a healthy community. And I for one, am pleased to make that investment. So thank you for your good work, Kurt, and the Bureau. And thank you, Innovative Housing, for delivering another terrific project. Aye.
U Daily.
Thank you for the presentation and your hard work. I am, of course, very excited about this project and especially happy to hear that you have 100% visibility and 100% adaptability and the partnership with Community Visions, because as short as we are in affordable housing, we're even perhaps even shorter on accessible housing. Aye.
Well, thanks to everybody involved. I was particularly happy to hear about the community space, both indoor and outdoor. And that's one of the things that raises the cost of the whole development, because obviously those don't count under the per unit, but it's the thing that makes a community instead of just a project. So thank you for doing that. Aye.
Wheeler.
Great project. Thanks. Aye. The ordinance is passed. Thank you. Next item.